As the Hatfields and McCoys of the American West, environmentalists and ranchers seldom trod the same side of the street. So when we do find them working the same piece of ground, we simply must ask, can environmentalists and ranchers work together?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 802nd edition of the Food Chain Radio program right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends down there in Gold Beach who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Ricochet on the boards. Hello, Rick.
Good day, Michael.
Folks, it is true. Environmentalists and ranchers have become the Hatfields and McCoys of the American West. As such, they are seldom seen walking the same side of the street. In fact, environmentalists and ranchers are traditional enemies because each side advocates for a different use of the land. Environmentalists want to preserve the land in its natural state. Ranchers want to use the land to earn a living. There have been not much room in the middle there for the two sides to just get along. And so the two communities have not been just getting along. But since the environmental community is backed by people in the city with all their votes and all their dollars, it has the environmental community has been able to purchase large parcels of ranch lands throughout the West and set them aside as conservancies. But a funny thing happened on the way to conserving all that land. Invasive species of plants moved in and took over the landscape. As the environmental community pondered what to do with all the weeds it now was conserving, someone suggested bringing back the ranchers, whose animals, they thought, just might graze away all those weeds. This suggestion leads us to ask, can environmentalists and ranchers work together to make money and preserve the environment? Well, here to help us find an answer, we have an environmentalist and a cattleman. We'll start with the environmentalist. Her name, Jeanette Tuitelli Lewis, and she is the executive director of the Sierra Foothill Conservancy. Jeanette, welcome to the Food Chain.
Thank you. Good morning.
Pleasure to have you aboard. What is the Sierra Foothill Conservancy?
So Sierra Foothill Conservancy is a local land trust. We are a conservation organization.
When you say local, you're talking about where?
I'm talking about Fresno, Madera, Mariposa counties, and eastern Merced County.
Okay, I'm looking at a map here of your area of interest, and it includes a big, huge chunk of the Sierra foothills from way down south, kind of like by... Well, a little bit south of Fresno and all the way up north of Mariposa there. So you've got a big, huge chunk of area of interest. And you have how many conservancies in that area?
We are, if you're talking about specific lands that we have, we own and manage about 6,500 acres ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also have about 25 ranching partnerships called conservation easements that we also hold. We've total protected about 25,000 acres of lands in this region. And so if you're referring to conservancies as far as other groups, you know, there are other land trusts that mm-hmm. also work generally in the region, but our main focus area is the foothills between Yosemite and Kings Canyon National Parks.
Well, good enough. Well, we always like to ask, who pays the way for the Sierra Foothills Conservancy?
So we're funded by a few different ways. It's always good, especially in these most recent economic times, to have as diverse a portfolio as you can. So we have a strong membership of about 1,000 or so members that give individually. We are also funded by some foundations and a lot of our properties to actually conduct land deals are either donated or we receive state funds. mm-hmm. from different agencies, including the Sierra Nevada Conservancy, which has been a wonderful funder for us, as well as the Wildlife Conservation Board.
Was I far off in my assertion that, by and large, it's the city folks that support these conservancies?
I would say, by and large, our membership is mostly in Fresno, mm-hmm. Which means that they are more within this sort of urban/suburban area, and they are probably the ones that are most supportive as far as dollars are concerned for the foothill lands out here.
And when you support it with your dollars, that's the way everybody understands support, right?
Yes.
Well, also with us today, we have Bill Freeman, who's the herd manager for Sierra Lands Beef. Bill, welcome to the food chain.
Good morning, Michael. How are you?
Very good. Thank you. Now, Sierra Lands, now I know you guys are connected because you're on the same phone line, right?
Yes.
Correct.
So, Sierra, what is the connection of Sierra Lands Beef then with the Sierra Foothill Conservancy?
Well, Sierra Lands Beef is actually an LLC that is owned by Sierra Foothill Conservancy. And basically what happened is a couple of years ago, the Conservancy decided to kind of take the next step in managing some of the grasslands that they own and form Sierra Lands Beef as kind of a tool, as a ranching basic company to basically run their own cattle on those preserves and some of the other grounds that they're managing, basically with the main objective of improving the biodiversity and managing those properties. So
you, I guess it's kind of like we decided to take the land out of production and then we decided to put it back in production.
Yeah, well, actually, our lands were never really out of production for grazing since we have formed. We've been around since 1996.
Mm-hmm.
What had happened, at least in California, is that in the 80s and 90s, with the rise of the environmental movement, there was a lot of negative perception about grazing from the environmental community. It was during that time that a lot of public land managers removed grazing because they thought that was the best way to restore habitat. What happened is that, you know, after several years went by, these sort of land managers also noticed that it was private ranches that had active grazing that had the best biodiversity on their properties. And so some research was conducted that showed that that was indeed the case. After several years, what happens is that the invasive grasses develop into these impenetrable thatches that really suppress the native plants and decrease biodiversity. Our preserve was actually part of that study, so I should retract and say there was a short period of time when grazing was taken off of this preserve before Sierra Foothill Conservancy mm-hmm. owned it, and it was under another entity.
But in general, what we've come to recognize is that animals on the land actually have a beneficial aspect of, or result on how the land develops, or and the growth of plants and whatnot.
Yes, that's right.
I suppose there are caveats there, too. I suppose that somebody has to be there knowledgeable as watching over things and so things don't get overgrazed or trampled down. But it's kind of reminiscent of the discussion that is often brought up about buffalo and the prairies and how buffalo were really responsible, you know, the grazing of those animals was really responsible for maintaining a very healthy habitat there. Bill, you're a cattleman. Tell us a little bit about being a cattleman. How did you come to be a cattleman?
Well, I grew up actually in Southern California around the Warner Springs area. There, it's kind of one of the few areas in Southern California where actual working landscapes in terms of ranching still exist in Southern California. After that, I went to Cal Poly San Luis Obispo and studied there. I was an ag systems management major with a livestock production emphasis and also took quite a few range management classes and things like that there.
So you're a college-educated cattleman.
Yes, so technically I am. So I actually After I graduated, I worked on a couple ranches here in California and spent 2 years up in Montana at an Angus ranch there and a little bit of time in Oregon and then ended up back in California. So,
well, I think we're going to have some fun today because we're talking with two sides of the coin that typically don't walk the same side of the street, the environmental community and the ranching community. And yet here we are, we have them working together, the same parcels of land, to essentially make money and to preserve the landscape. Possible? What do you think? Is it possible for farmers and environmentalists and ranchers to work together to preserve the environment and to make money? What do you think? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Pick up your phone and join us. We're talking about the Hatfields and McCoys of modern agriculture. And we'd love to hear what you have to think as well. 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Right back. Do stay tuned.
Get this. You can earn a 5-, 6-, or 7-figure income by farming a small parcel of land in or near the city. You can be old or young, rich or poor, married or single. You can rent, lease, or own. You can farm small fruits on prairie bench lands, houseplants in coastal valleys, flowers on steep wooded hillsides, vegetables in city green belts, ornamentals in neighborhoods of million-dollar homes. There's only one catch. You must compete with other farmers for the consumer dollars. You can compete with others and win the consumer dollars with the help of MetroFarm, the guide to growing for profit in or near the city. MetroFarm is the Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner that will guide you step by step through the planning and development of your very own income-generating metropolitan farm. Abraham Lincoln said the greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living on a small parcel of land. Get in on the future today. Get a copy of MetroFarm at www.metrofarm.com.
Holy smokes, look who we found working together. We found a cattleman and an environmentalist, the environmentalist being Jeanette Tuatelli-Lewis, who is the executive director for Sierra Foothills Conservancy, and the cattleman, Bill Freeman, manages the herd for Sierra Lands Beef. Working together in the foothills of the Sierras to make money and to preserve the environment. Now, these two represent two really the Hatfields and McCoys, if you will, of modern agriculture, because they really haven't gone along all that well. I have a little personal experience to relate to kind of illustrate this animosity, this traditional animosity. I have an uncle who was a cowboy ranchman, a true cattleman, in fact, a rodeo cowboy. And I had a brother-in-law who was a Ph.D. Candidate working in the Montana mountains and studying wildlife and whatnot, a true environmentalist, had long hair and everything. And so somehow my brother-in-law environmentalist ended up in a tavern in Cook City, Montana, where my uncle, the cowboy, happened to be engaged in having a few adult beverages with his cowboy friends. And an interesting conversation ensued, and the result of that conversation was that my poor hippie environmentalist brother-in-law got a free haircut, and for which they had discussions through the years, but you know what? It really wasn't personal. It was more just that was the animosity. The ranchers felt that the environmentalists were doing their best to take away their living, and the environmentalists thought that the ranchers were doing their best to destroy the environment. And so there was that animosity, and it made for interesting family conversations. But I suppose that the Olson family was not the only family to go through that. And I suppose the two of you have seen that. Bill, you were a Montana cowboy for a while. Do you see any of that action up there?
Well, absolutely. You know, and like you said, there happens to be and typically is just a huge disconnect between the environmental community and ranchers. And, you know, I've experienced it quite a bit, similar situations to what you're saying and things like that, and you know, to be honest with you, it's kind of a sad thing, because I think on both sides, in certain areas of Montana, definitely saw it to where you know, people get one perception started in their head, and they can't seem to break out of that or don't care to, you know. And it's a sad thing because, you know, and Jeanette can explain further, like Jeanette was saying earlier, you know, there have been a lot of steps moving towards the middle on both sides. And I think one of the reasons why is because people are starting to realize, both environmental community and the ranchers, that we really are trying to go for the same goal at the end.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that, you know, a lot of ranchers think that, you know, conservation groups and environmentalists are, like you said, they're just trying to take away their living. They don't want cattle on the land. They want to limit what you can do and be controlling and just set aside property for absolutely no use, or, you know, to basically take them, make them non-working landscapes. You know, I think that's the main perception there. And obviously that's the opposite of what a typical rancher would want. So.
Jeanette? Now, you represent the environmental community, and you probably saw the other side of the equation pretty become pretty predominant at times as well, correct?
Yeah, I'd say so. But I do think, you know, I would agree with Billy. I think that land trusts in particular have done a phenomenal job at really bringing the two sides together. Because I think that, and I think it's sort of funny because we, many of us don't really call ourselves so much environmentalists as conservationists. It seems to be something that every, you know, most people can agree to. So it's sort of, you know, the middle ground on things. We take a very pragmatic approach to conservation, and I think that a lot of land trusts do because they understand the importance of having a viable local economy. As well as protecting and conserving landscapes. And so I do think that it's really changing.
Well, you know, when it started out, it did seem to be that the line was very clearly drawn in the sand, whereas the ranching community was stood on one side of the land and the conservationists or environmentalists on the other, and yet they seem to be working together like you guys are demonstrating. But What exactly does the environmental community want, Jeanette?
Well, I'm not sure that I can speak totally for the environmental community.
But I bet you can get a pretty good rough draft.
Well, I think that generally the idea of returning and restoring landscapes to some point in the past is often what you hear, whether it's, you know, restoring, you know, landscapes themselves or specific species themselves to, you know, be more viable. I think that is often, you know, sort of an end goal. I think that, you know, times have really changed, and I think that we, like, for example, with the California native or the invasive grasses, they have all become naturalized. And so we really have to figure out how we're going to move forward and be able to both preserve the plants that we do have and the habitat we do have, and while incorporating you know, things such as ranching now that is really important for managing those things. And so I think that it's... I think that Billy is right in that I think generally the end goal is the same. It's mm-hmm. just the methods of getting there are a little bit different.
Well, tell us a little bit about what happened then when we removed the grazing animals from the landscape. You kind of sketched it in before, but tell us what happens when, you know, we just turn land back to the wild with no intervention by man or his animals.
Yeah, well, first of all, I'd like to say that I think that generally the lands in California were, you know, they were grazed anyway beforehand. So mm-hmm. by, you know, large elk herds, deer, I think a lot of what we are doing is trying to sort of mimic those old systems or those old grazing patterns. So one of the things that happened was, at least with Sierra Foothill Conservancy, is when we took on one of our larger properties, which is a 3,000-acre preserve, grazing had been removed from there. And particularly in vernal pools, there in the areas that were not grazed, it was there was obviously a lot less biodiversity. And as I had mentioned earlier, the invasive grasses, they create such a dense thatch that the native plants really can't penetrate that.
Mm-hmm.
The other problem with grazing, not grazing in vernal pools, is that they the grasses increase evapotranspiration of the water. So that ends up creating these sort of shorter life cycles that the native plants have to work under, and that doesn't really work for them. So by reducing those grasses, the vernal pools stay for longer, and these are temporary pools of water, essentially, and they last longer, which means that the plants, the native plants and native animals, can complete their life cycle. So that is part of the diversity there. So
that's kind of interesting, because what you're telling us, it seems, is that nature evolved with lots of animals, right? And the animals and the landscaping kind of evolved together. And when the animals were removed, then it allowed for all kinds of invasive species to come in and just take over. And thus, nature was equally bewildered and taken over, as though it was overgrazed almost. So it was almost like too much of no intervention.
Yeah, I think that pretty much all properties require some level of management. I think the idea of taking a property and setting it aside, whether it's a grassland, a woodland, or a forest, I think is sort of...
It reminds me of a lawn I saw, or a sign I saw over a weed patch in front of a house yesterday. It was a food, not lawns, and the lawn had been displaced by weeds that were 6 feet tall. The funniest thing you ever saw. Folks, right back with the food chain and you, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Well, folks, as the Hatfields and McCoys of the American West, environmentalists and ranchers seldom trod the same side of the street. And yet today we find them working together up in the Sierras. We're here today. With us today we have Jeanette Tuatelli-Lewis, the executive director of the Sierra Foothill Conservancy. We have Bill Freeman, herd manager, Sierra Lands Beef, which is a wholly owned subsidiary of the Sierra Foothill Conservancy. It seems like environmentalists, or conservationists, if you will, have gone into the business of ranching. Do you hope to make money, Jeanette?
Well, yes, but I think most importantly, we hope to make sure that all of our land stewardship costs are covered. And so the LLC is one way that we can help provide some additional income for land management of our preserve.
So you have big, huge pieces of land, and it costs money to keep them up, to keep them from going wild on you. And so, you know, I was just thinking of this front yard I saw the other day. I was just driving down the street, and there was a giant weed patch. And as I guess to tell people what they were doing, they put a sign up, a beautiful sign on their house that said, food, not lawns, as if to say, well, we're getting rid of our lawn and we're going to grow food. But instead of growing food, they're really growing weeds. And there you are.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I was going to comment, I was just thinking during the break that, you know, one thing I think is important to kind of discuss when we're talking about biodiversity. You know, a lot of people ask us, you know, okay, what does that mean, biodiversity on these grasslands? You know, and I think it's really multiple parts. You know, one part of it is really the grassland biodiversity. You know, California right now is predominantly Mediterranean species as opposed to native species that are here. I think I was reading something that say that there's about 1% of native species left in California grasslands, which is pretty shocking. And so kind of what we're talking about with the grassland biodiversity is we want to have, you know, multiple grass species there, or as many as we can that are suitable for that environment. And when you remove the grazing on properties, basically what you have is the predominant invasive species kind of take over the rest of them and choke them out. And so with the grazing that we're introducing, we're kind of promoting, you know, what we would call, you know, what a lot of someone would call a balanced nutrition diet, mm-hmm. those grasses. You know, we've got fillery, we've got wild oats, we've got, you know, a lot of different types of grasses to where those cattle can actually choose what they want to eat, you know, at that time during the season, that particular day, you know, to really supplement them.
And you know, as a consequence, you probably have a lot more healthy critters, too, because they can choose from many different things to eat instead of having one thing to eat.
Absolutely. And, you know, the other thing that happens when we're, you know, what we're doing is what you would call, you know, high-intensity, short-duration grazing or rotational grazing. And so with that, you're actually not only increasing the different types of grasses that are there, you're also increasing and letting the native grass species grow back in there because they're not being choked out as much. And the other thing you're doing is you're also promoting more grass growth. And so not only are the cattle having a better balanced nutrition, they're actually getting more grass because of the management.
Well, so, tell us a little bit about how you graze the foothills. What is the technique for moving cattle across the land?
Well, kind of what we're trying to do, and Jeanette touched on it earlier, so maybe I can elaborate, is we're trying to mimic a natural system. You know, predominantly it was large elk herds in the past that were grazing in the environment here. And the way that the large elk herds would graze is they, you know, instead of being completely dispersed out throughout the landscape, you know, a group of five here, five there, they were large consolidated herds. They're gregarious. They like to move all together. And so you'd have a large amount of elk that would move into one area and, you know, heavily impact that specific area at one time, and then they would move to a different area. And so what that causes is it causes, you know, a lot of impact in that one area, but you also get a lot of rest, you know, because they probably won't come back to that area for quite a long time, maybe not till the next year.
Well, it really sounds like the buffalo on the prairies.
It is very similar to that. You know, and you're getting a lot of the same effects, you know, as the buffalo would have. You know, you're getting a lot of the soil disturbance, you know, the plant impact, things like that. And so that's kind of what we're trying to mimic. We're trying to, you know, when we do impact an area, we're impacting it, you know, we're creating a lot of impact at that specific time, but we're not doing it in a way that causes erosion.
Mm-hmm.
We're not over-impacting it. We're letting each pasture rest for a long period of time, coming through and evenly impacting it and then moving on to the next one, while we're letting the rest of the ranches rest.
Jeanette, it would seem like there would have been a time when a environmentalist or conservationist would have seen this intense activity and say, oh my goodness, you're destroying the land, but maybe not so much anymore?
Well, yes, I agree, you know, and what we're trying to do is we're trying to kind of moderate the stocking density that we have on the ranches. And so we're never actually over impacting anything that we're using. And so that's kind of one technique that we're using. The other technique we're using was we have a base cow herd, and we're also using seasonal cattle to supplement that. And so during the period of growth, you know, basically now through May, we have seasonal cattle here, so we can use them to impact each ranch at the level that we want to, as they're more flexible than just the permanent cow herd on the ranches. So.
Very interesting. Well, let's go to the phones today, folks. 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Can farmers and ranchers get along with the environmental or conservationist community to preserve the land and make money? What do you think? Let's go to, let's see, Jim. Jim, welcome to the Food Chain.
Yeah, it sounds like you have some very interesting systems as far as your grazing practices. Is there any place that somebody can find information on your grazing systems?
Yeah, actually, what we did is we just launched our website a few months ago. And it's www.sierralandsbeef.com. And we have a little bit about our grazing system on there. And actually, to really get the most information, what you want to do is you want to look up a holistic management, and you can just Google that. They actually have an entire website on holistic management, and that is basically the grazing system that we're trying to develop. So I think it's holisticmanagement.com, and that's just H-O-L, holistic management.
Have you ever heard of a guy named Joel Salatin? It seems, you know, Joel talks a lot about grazing pastured beef, he calls it, but it sounds a lot like, you know, you're doing on a very big scale what he's doing on a very small scale, which is you keep rotating the animals through the pasture.
I haven't actually. You know, Alan Savory is
Alan
kind
Savory,
of the guy that we've been using and to look forward to, and we also, you know, Rob Rutherford over at Cal Poly was the holistic management instructor there, along with Joel Judge over there, and Mike Hall were the people that myself and my co-worker were involved with over there, helping them manage their bench for the school there and the grazing systems there. So they also taught us a lot over there. So.
Okay, fair enough, folks. This is the Food Chain. Michael Olson. We're talking with Jeanette Tuatelli-Lewis, Executive Director of the Sierra Foothill Conservancy, Bill Freeman, Herd Manager for the Sierra Lands Beef, and you, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1980. Question on the table today, can the environmental community and the ranching and farming community work together to make money and preserve the land? What do you think? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080, right back. Well, folks, we're working together today. We have the environmental community, we have the ranching community, and we have you. Do you think farmers and ranchers and environmentalists can work together to make money and preserve the environment? That's the question on the table today. And let's try Nick. Nick, welcome to the Food Chain.
Thanks. I'm wondering why bringing back elk to that property is out of the question.
Or elk or buffalo, yes.
Well, okay. You can. They may have had buffalo in California, but elk ran freely.
Yeah, okay, good question.
And there's also profit in them.
There you go. What about it, Jeanette? Why don't we bring elk back instead of cattle?
Well, I know that there have been, you know, some folks interested in doing that. I can't speak as to why that's not, you know, sort of a larger trend. I think that the fencing that's required to keep elk in, I mean, unless you just let them roam freely everywhere, which is not likely if you're trying to probably move through and manage them and actually use them for profit, the fencing that's required for elk would be quite expensive. I mean, you have to have really tall fencing to be able to keep them in place. I imagine that might be one reason why.
They're also having...
I'm sorry to interrupt. I could chime in a couple
ahead.
Of things I could think of. The one major reason I can think of is because in order for elk to really be in a natural system like we're trying to mimic, you really need a lot more property than what we have for them to actually naturally move from an area, from area to area. You know, our largest ranch that we're running on right now is about 3,000 acres, and so... You know, it's really just a lot more feasible to try to use domesticated livestock to try to mimic that
right.
movement. Because with the elk, you know, obviously we wouldn't really be able to control, you know, exactly what pasture we have them in because they'd be moving and jumping over fences and things like that. So you would have to have, and I could see how that would be feasible if you're having, you know, 100,000 acres or large management area to do that with, because the elk would get into a natural system where they would move around. But with the small ranches that we have, I think that the cattle, since we're able to control them a little bit better, we can take them out of an area. We can keep them from over-impacting a riparian area. We can move them to uplands. We can move them to meadows, wherever we want. The second thing is I really think on these ranches, the other thing we're trying to preserve is that these ranches have a significant cultural, resource. And I think that's important to look at, too, is that, you know, these were ranches, they've been ranches for a long time, and that's something that we're also trying to, we're trying to conserve and we're trying to promote is the ranching lifestyle and that culture in the area also. So.
Cowboys forever, I'm for it. And, well, you know, Ted Turner, I suppose you could say the same thing about buffalo being too big and needing too much land, but Ted Turner put together quite a buffalo herd up in Montana. And he's, of course, has quite a bit of land, and I suppose that buffalo would require too much land as well. True, Bill?
Well, you know, I think that as opposed to elk, maybe buffalo would be a little bit more controllable, but I think it's still just the major issue of being able to control them enough to do
right.
what to do. And also, you know, the other thing about the buffalo is you've also got the brucellosis risk associated with the buffalo, had huge problems with that around you know, Yellowstone National Park, the buffalo carrying the brucellosis bacteria and spreading that to the cattle that are there locally. So,
and also they're having trouble with the encephalopathies spreading from the wild cervid population into domestic elk populations as well, which was an issue that Montana was dealing with, is that, you know, the cervid population of the wild cervids of the deer and elk of Colorado were have natural incidence of mad deer disease, I guess you'd call it, that it was seen spreading to some of the populations of domesticated cervids. So that was an issue as well. At any rate, we now have land conservancies, land easements. How does all of that work, Jeanette?
So land or conservation easements are partnerships with landowners. I think the most important thing is that these are all volunteer. And so it often happens that, you know, there might be a historic ranch that's been owned and operated by a family for a long time. Sometimes the descendants are not as interested in ranching as the older generations. And, you know, sometimes they just want to make sure that the ranch is going to stay as a ranch. We, Sierra Conservancy, we will purchase essentially the development rights, or in some cases the landowner will donate the development rights to us. Those become extinguished, and essentially it enables the ranch to stay a ranch in perpetuity. So.
Mm-hmm. Now, what advantage would there be, like, to an owner, I mean, to a third-generation owner or something like that? You know, the ranch is coming into my hands, and all of a sudden... there's probably a significant tax benefit to doing this as well, correct?
There can be. It varies from state to state, and it obviously depends upon multiple factors. But the value of the ranch has decreased. It's approximately about half often. So, you know, if you have $1 million ranch, the development rights might be worth $500,000. And so the value of the ranch has decreased, but often it can be a really good deal for some ranchers because they can take those funds and buy more land. And if they intend to always be ranching, then that's a great thing for them.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay, when we come back, I'm going to ask the big question is, what do regular ranches think about you guys? You have all of these tax advantages. You have nonprofit status. You have... It seems like it's a pretty good way of ranching cattle. But what do real ranches say that have to compete with you? That's the question that I will lay on the table when we get back. This is the Food Chain Radio Program, talking with Jeanette Tuatelli Lewis and Bill Freeman and you. Do stay tuned. Welcome back. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. So much to talk about, so little time. And today we're picking up the issue of rangeland, ranch lands throughout the West, and the typical or the traditional animosity between conservationists and environmentalists and the farming and ranching community. And we're picking up a model wherein it seems as though they seem to be working together to both make money and preserve the land. So my question to the both of you, is this a model that frightens traditional ranchers that with whom you must compete? Bill?
I think that it does. And to be honest with you, I think that there's a little bit of a misconception about how it may be structured. The way that Sierra Lands Beef is structured, and we did so to kind of make sure that there wasn't a huge conflict of interest or benefit, private benefit there, is that Sierra Lands Beef is actually its own company, LLC, and has its own financing. And the way it's set up is that Sierra Lands Beef has to actually lease the property at market rates from the conservancy. And so kind of the way it's set up is that SLB doesn't really have a huge financial advantage to having access to the properties to lease. I think that you could say that we are in a little bit of a competition with local ranchers in specific areas because some of them would like to lease that ground also.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that as far as financially, we are set up to where we are also paying the same as the local rancher would be paying for that property. I think that I think what we're really trying to aim at is that we're trying to establish that there's a large public benefit that's coming from us being able to manage those properties in a way that's benefiting the environment in those areas.
Jeanette, is that kind of like a good neighbor policy?
Like a good neighbor?
Yeah. Wherein you charge your solely owned affiliate market rates. I mean, you could, you know, just give them the land, couldn't you?
Well, I mean, it's set up as a business. And I think really to make sure that the conservancy is getting the benefit of having that land leased. I mean, originally, I mean, they're paying, you know, what we have other leasees have paid. We don't want to be without that income. Our finance are separate. And so, you know, it makes sense that we charge Sierra Lands Beef for that income that we would have lost otherwise.
Right. Well, let me ask you this, Bill. Is this a model that you see could be adopted by traditional agriculture to survive in a rapidly modernizing, urbanizing world?
Well, do you mean the model of the working with the conservancy?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I think that it can. And, you know, obviously there's a lot of other land conservancies around the country and in California as well that that are leasing their ground to local ranchers, and that's a model that's been working very well for them. And so I think that that's something that needs to continue to be pursued. I think that, you know, we've been moving into the model of that for a long time, where some of the ranches that were previously not grazed at all, you know, they brought back the local ranchers and allowed them to graze, and it's benefited both the local economy, the local rancher, and the ground, and the conservancies all together. So it's been a really good thing. So hopefully it continues, for sure.
Well, hey, Jeanette, I have to ask you, how's the beef?
The beef is excellent. And we've actually, I think that folks that, you know, are not used to grass-fed, grass-finished beef, which we should, you know, make sure
just,
the state is
just out of time, it's Sierra Lands Beef, right? Sierra Lands Beef.
Yes.
Thank you, Jeanette. Thank you, Bill. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in the Food Chain.
Great. Thank you.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.